that we have left. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Supernatural. Metaphysical. Paranormal. You know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. Hey, it's Wednesday night, and here we are. We're showing up as the She Squatchers. So, of course, I've got my fellow teammate, Jenna Grover. Are you there, Jenna?
I certainly am, and I'm excited for the guests.
I am, too. But before we get going on that, we've got a few announcements to make. We've got our upcoming events. We've got this weekend on Saturday, October 6th, we've got I Outran, the Hairy Man Marathon. It's a 1K and a 5K in Virgis, Minnesota. And you should check out our website at shesquatchers.com and click on the events page to get the details about that event there. Next on the list will be at the Minnesota Paracon at the Minomen Shooting Star Casino Hotel and Event Center in Minomen, Minnesota. We'll be there October 11th and 12th for that event. And, of course, we'll have our booth there and we'll be answering all your Bigfoot questions and hearing your stories that you come to share with us. So please come share with us. It's our stomping grounds in Minnesota. And then we're going to be heading out for Tennessee. The Tennessee Bigfoot Conference is happening in Kingsport, Tennessee, October 19th, 20th, and 21st. And I got the speaker scheduled today, Jenna. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, we're going to be speaking for 2 hours on Friday and a 90-minute question-and-answer panel later that day. Ooh. And then we're speaking an hour and a half on Saturday with another hour to 90 minutes of a question and answer panel. And guess who's running the Bigfoot calling contest?
I wonder who it is. Does her name start with J?
It does. It might be you. It might be me. Who knows? Who feels like doing it that day? If I still have a voice after speaking all that much. And then I hear that we've been asked to help to co-lead the Bigfoot expedition that night on Saturday night at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. So, hey, everybody, there are VIP tickets on sale right now for that. It's a very special thing. And only people with VIP tickets will get to come to the very special VIP meet and greet party on Friday night to hang out with us. And there's a limited amount of those tickets being sold, so you have to get them right away if you want to come. They're only $35, and it is inclusive of your two-day pass into the event. You get to have a T-shirt, and we will sign a book called The Bigfoot Explorers 2018. We did not write the book. We're just featured in it. And we're on the cover. So they have that. So go check it out, TennesseeBigfootConference.com or BigfootDay.com. So we want to get right to our guests because we are really excited to have them on the show tonight. We've got Dan Williams and Scott Hibbs from the Paranormal Research Institute. Hey, guys. Are you there?
We are here.
Welcome to the show. We're so glad you could join us on the journey tonight.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
So, you know, normally we're talking about Bigfoot, and you guys are a paranormal research team. I know you guys say you believe in Bigfoot. So we're going to talk a little bit about your research and what you guys have been doing. And I hear that Dan has had a little bit of a Bigfoot experience on his own. So, of course, we're going to want to hear about that, too.
I think we can like that.
So, first of all, let's just ask the basic questions that everybody wants to know. Dan, when did you get interested in the paranormal, and how did that happen for you?
Oh, let's see. I think I was about 8 years old, and I read Hans Holzer, Ghosts. And that kind of started the whole journey. After that, I was just fascinated with the whole concept of it and really just kind of followed through most of my life on and off trying to figure out exactly what it is. So.
Well, what did you figure out? Did you have it all solved yet?
Not a bit, no. We figured out that we don't know anything at all about what's there. We know that there's something there, but we know nothing about it. So one of my friends up in Alaska actually phrased it as, we know as much about the paranormal world as an ant knows about the mountain it's walking on.
Now, how do you know how much that ant knows about that mountain?
Mm-hmm.
Right, right? All right, so... How about you, Scott? When did you become interested in the paranormal, and how did that happen for you?
For me, it was early childhood. I don't know, 10, 11 years old. I remember subscribing to the Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown series, that TV. They'd send you a new book every, like, 2 months. 1 month, one issue would be about ghosts, and then another one would be about UFOs and so forth. And I've been watching. There was a show in the mid-90s called Sightings. I don't know if you remember that one or not, but...
Oh, yes.
So I just basically been reading and watching as much, you know, the TV shows and reading as many books as I can. And then, of course, and then I got into Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi at a later time, so...
Ooh, who is your favorite Ghost Hunter on Ghost Hunters?
Grant Wilson, definitely.
Yeah!
He's a personal favorite. Yeah, I met the guy, so it was like a dream come true for me.
You're welcome.
We love Grant.
We do love Grant. Favorite.
We mm-hmm. love him. We're going to be hanging out with Grant next week.
He's going to be at that event with you guys?
Oh, he's mm-hmm. always there. He's always yeah. there.
Mm-hmm. That is the best event. You guys just, I wish you could go and just check it out. And if you guys are local, even if you're not, get over there to the Shooting Star Casino.
Uh-oh.
That's right. It is a good event, and the reason why it's a good event is because if you're going to fly into town, you're going to fly into Fargo, and then you have to drive, you know, about an hour and a half to get there, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And so all the celebrities who are there are hanging out in the hotel bar. There's two bars, and they're hanging out at the restaurant and the bar. And so you're just hanging out with them all the time. Even after the event ends in the evening, you're hanging out and you really get to know them. And a lot of the times they're coming back year after year and they all say it's their favorite event.
Mm-hmm. And they're all very cool. Every single one of them are very cool. So it's, yeah, you guys would love it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Nick Raff is going to be there. I like Nick. We just saw Nick last month at CryptidCon in Kentucky.
Yes, he's very nice.
Hey, Nick, we'll see you next month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never met Nick. He seems like a decent guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, Lauren Coleman is going to be there. Yay. He's a big, he's got the Bigfoot Museum in Maine, so we love him. We love Lauren. Shout out
yes.
to Lauren.
Nice. Hey, Lauren.
Yeah. We love you. Yeah. So, anyway... back to you guys. So you developed this paranormal team, the Paranormal Research Institute. Can you tell us a little bit about when that started and what that's all about? What's your mission and where you're located?
Well, basically, the Paranormal Research Institute, I started it in 2016. And we're located in Ottawa, Illinois. And the reason that we started it was just because... I began noticing that there wasn't a whole lot of scientific research being done. People would go out and, I mean, they'd do ghost teams and they would go out and they would do investigations and they'd say, hey, look at the cool stuff we found. And when we started asking them, okay, well, what time did you find this? And, you know, what was the temperature? What was the atmospheric conditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Nobody was able to answer it. And so we said, okay, well, let's actually take a little more scientific approach and see if we can start charting some of this stuff, start establishing patterns and things like that, so we can maybe in the future be able to predict ghost activity and then actually start to study it then. Kickstart.
Very
drinking Kickstart.
Kickstart my heart.
I was showing Jenna my drink. Oh, I'm drinking a Kickstart. Oh, it's my new favorite drink. It's an energizing pineapple orange mango. I love this with coconut water.
Well, and it does have vitamin B, so technically we are being healthy by drinking it. Thank you,
girl. it's not just that it's got 100% of vitamin C. It's got vitamin, all kinds of vitamin Bs and all kinds of everything. It's a hydrating boost.
I drink the Black Cherry Kickstart.
Do you?
Yeah, that's like my drink. I can't drink Monster anymore, so I moved to the Black Cherry Kickstart.
Well, I can't drink the energy drinks, but this is okay with the with all the vitamins and stuff. I seem to like this one a lot. Anyway, sorry. I was just going to...
Oh, that's all right.
It's all right. You talk about anything here.
Well, yeah, that was
open topics.
Things. Just wanted to do things a little different and try and move the paranormal more into science and science more into the paranormal. So that was the whole point of the starting of the PRI.
Awesome. So you've got some new strategies. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're doing it differently?
You want to talk about cartography?
Yeah, I was going to say we do cartography, which is basically logging everything that happens. A cartographer will sit like outside the investigation and basically will run the investigation. They will monitor the behavior of the investigators, and via a walkie-talkie, every time an event happens, they will radio the cartographer to tell them when that is, and they will chart exactly what time it happened. And, you know, if a cartographer were to sense that an investigator was getting a little, you know, not feeling too well or whatever, or they would get them out and replace them with another investigator. So they're kind of like the, I don't know, the ears and eyes of the investigation.
Yeah, kind of the overview.
Yeah.
The real advantage to it is at the end of the investigation, we have a complete log file. We can actually have multiple teams out investigating like a large location. But at the very end, we have a complete log file of everything that went on everywhere the entire time. So we can start establishing patterning and things like that.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I didn't understand that before, so thank you for explaining it, because I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, when I mentioned cartography to you, Jen, you were like, well, what's that? And I'm like, well, we'll discuss it.
Yeah, so I was still in the dark going, I still don't know what that is.
That's very cool, though. I like that you guys do that. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, the objectivity really helps, because you've got that way, you know, the third party sitting outside the investigation, they're not getting wrapped up in the mood.
Emotional.
Everything,
right.
Exactly. So they can sit there and kind of dispassionately log.
Very cool. And so are they in constant communication with everybody?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, each team is on a different radio channel. So they can, you know, so there's no interference amongst the different teams.
Gotcha. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. So are there other, what are the advantages of doing that other than what you've already stated? Are there other advantages?
Well, the biggest one, like I said, is going to be the establishment of patterning. So the plan is that after we do enough investigations, or if we can get enough other teams using the same methodology, that eventually we'll be able to put all this stuff into a database and analyze, actually do data analysis and start looking at patterns of hauntings. Nobody's ever looked at that before. No one knows exactly when or where these things occur. And so theoretically, once we get enough data, we'd be able to look at this and go, okay, well, at 12:05 p.m. on Saturday night, we're likely to have an encounter. And then we can actually start studying that encounter. You know, we can predict and we can plan for that encounter. Then we can actually begin studying and see what's going on.
That's very cool. Now, are you guys the first team that's been using this, do you think? Or do you think this has been around for quite a long time? Or I guess I don't know enough about it.
We're actually, as far as I'm aware, we're the first team to do it. We kind of introduced it to everybody. I've talked about it in Kansas City the last couple of years. And we've had some really good response. Actually, we've started working with a parapsychologist down in Kansas City now. He's actually, he's got a degree in parapsychology. He is helping to refine some of the procedures and things and make them actually truly something the scientific community will look at and acknowledge. So it's been a huge help working with him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so here's my confessional. Jenna, the last day that we were there, when I kind of disappeared at the end, it's that guy I was talking to.
Oh, okay, yeah, she disappeared. We were all just like, where's Jen? We don't know.
It was Jerry Garcia from The Grateful Dead.
Oh, no. You got to give him a shout-out, Scott. You got to give him a shout-out on the air.
Go ahead.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, if you're listening?
Yeah. He's a fascinating gentleman, very, very intelligent, and we started talking parallel universes, and that was the end of it. We were gone.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. He is. I can't say enough good about him. He is. He's brought a perspective that we had no concept of. I mean, it's and like I said, it's been a huge thing just even working with a parapsychologist. This was like, you know, when I was a kid, a parapsychologist was up on such a high pedestal, and I never really planned to meet one because, you know, they're not exactly everywhere. And so meeting Mike and talking with him and working with him has been just beyond fantastic. So we're hoping that keeps on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. You're very fortunate to get to work with him. So I'm sure it's a great thing all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Awesome. So I was talking to you guys off the air, and I hear that you don't do a lot of residential investigations.
Not a whole lot. If we really, really, really need to, we will do them. I mean, if somebody's actually in trouble or in a panic or everything, we'll do them. The problem with residential investigations is they're so invasive to do it correctly for the resident that, I mean, most people don't really want you going through their closets and underwear drawers and things looking for, you know, reasons of activity. And so, yeah, it's just one of those things of you have to really change your methodology.
And another thing, if I could add to that real quick, I'll give you an example. We drove about 2.5 hours away from us to do an investigation of this gal's house that lived in a college town, you know, a ways away. Said that she contacted us and said there was activity going on in her house. So we thought, let's help this girl out. We got there, total flake. I mean, this girl was afraid of her own shadow. She thought her house was haunted. We really don't think it was. That's a long, you know, you just never know what you get with residentials.
That's true. I've done some residential paranormal investigations and was like, wow, these people are really not okay.
Yeah. Exactly. and then you do a residential and you leave and then they, you know, they claim, oh, there was a $1,000 ring sitting on my counter. Well, it's not there now. It's a whole can of worms you don't want to get into.
Yeah. Right. Well, I never had that happen, but dealing with people who probably should be seeking some mental health care.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually one of the first things that, you know, depending on the story that we get from them, that is a fairly early thing is, have you had a psychiatric evaluation recently? You have to ask because you never know. Wake up, Jim. I saw you yawn.
Okay, yep. Yeah, but the listeners can't see me on, so shh. Jenna, you're on mute.
Yeah.
Probably.
We investigated this one house where there were some children involved, and they were both on medication for schizophrenia.
Oh, okay.
So, just, you know, that's what kind of stuff you deal with sometimes when you deal with residential.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. what's your favorite thing to investigate? What's your favorite scenario?
Wow, that's a tough one.
That's a loaded question.
I think we typically get more results in places that have been halfway houses and poor farms and drug rehab facilities,
mm-hmm.
Mental institutions. I mean, you get a lot of results in places like that. They're not always necessarily the most pleasant results, but you get a lot more results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough. I guess it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for straight activity, those are definitely the places. If you're looking for something more happy, that's probably not where you want to go investigate at.
I mean, for me, ideally, you know, I'd like to investigate a library where there's like books flying at me. That'd be pretty neat.
Oh, like, no.
Ghostbusters, yeah. That was cool.
But I mean, yeah, I've never had that happen to me, but I suppose it would be pretty neat if it did.
It's probably something.
The bar that we're sitting in right now is probably one of our absolute favorite places. Mm-hmm. We have consistent activity in here. I actually manage this bar, so we see stuff constantly.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, what better thing can you have than working a haunted bar when you're into ghosts?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's and the owner's very cool. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do an investigation. He's like, whatever, just don't burn the place down. And so we kind of use the place as a practice area. And like I said, we get very consistent results in here. So it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about something that you found there? Like, what kinds of things are you finding as far as evidence?
We've actually gotten EVPs with names. We got a name, Jimmy Brooks, one time on an EVP. Basically, we said, well, you know, can you give us your name? And the EVP was very, very clear of, I'm Jimmy Brooks. I mean, like, he was kind of pissed that we didn't know who he was.
It was plain as day. Some of these EVPs, you can't understand them. They tell you what you think it is, and after maybe 20 or 30 times, you start to believe it. This EVP was crystal clear.
Very clear, yeah.
Yep.
So did you do any research on his name? Did you find anything out about
him? We tried.
We did, but honestly, the town, Utica, that we're in, the records that are very vague. There's a canal that runs through here that was built in the 1830s, mostly by Irish immigrants, and no one kept any records of them. I mean, the conditions that they worked under were terrible. Most of them died, you know, when they were doing it. Like 80% of them died digging the canal. It's a weird kind of little town. It's actually a very, very active town. And so everything kind of centers, it seems like, on this tavern, which has been used as, it was used as body storage when there was an accident because it was the coolest place in town. There's just been a crazy amount of activity, actually. I had a little glass fly at me one day. It was kind of funny. It was a Saturday afternoon. I was talking to four people that were sitting at the bar, and they were kind of poo-pooing the whole ghost thing, and they didn't believe in it and what, you know, et cetera. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I don't really care whether you believe it or not. And I went back to work, and all four of them actually watched the glass lift up off the bar, fly over, hit me in the back, fall on the floor, and shatter. And so, you know, their immediate response was, how did you do that? I'm like, I have better things to do, you know.
Exactly. Well, have you guys ever been physically touched by...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, matter of fact, one of the other bartenders today apparently had his hair pulled right before our main server system decided to shut down. So he said, it pulled his hair hard enough to, like, jerk his head back. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff goes on around here.
Have you guys personally been through that?
Been touched a lot. You get touched a lot. You get a lot of perfume smells. You get a lot of shadows in here, which is we're actually getting ready. As soon as I can get the network straightened out, we're going to put a nighttime camera up. We're going to run from like 1 to 4 a.m. on ParanormalWarehouse.com. So we'll be live streaming the actual bar, so people can tune in and check it out and see what they see.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. So would that be running all the time?
It'll run from 1 to 4 a.m. I have to run it basically when there's nobody in the bar just because of privacy issues.
Oh, sure. I would
run it all the time, but people don't necessarily want to be on the internet being in a bar drinking, so we have to be a little sensitive to that.
That is true. I wouldn't want to be caught.
And my husband said he was going to be home. He's in that bar.
Right? I'd be checking it all the time. Who's there? Who's there? It'd be like the next show.
Exactly. Right. But yeah, we're going to run it overnight. So once we get the network straightened out, it'll be running overnight every night. Yeah. So
there you go. That just brought to mind the other thing I would never want to be caught on is one of those People of Walmart videos.
Oh,
God.
You have to be a little more radical in your dress than you are right now to be caught on that.
You haven't seen me go to Walmart before.
I don't think you could ever. I don't think you could ever end up on one of those, Jen, honestly.
Oh, I don't know about that, Jenna. Sometimes I just throw my jammies on and off I go.
Oh, boy.
So if anyone sees Jen on one of those, please let us know so we can take a look.
No. No. Please do not. It wasn't me. I don't go to Walmart. Anyway. So. Cool. So can you tell us the coolest thing? I'm going to ask you each the same question. Can you tell us the coolest thing that you ever experienced in the paranormal investigations?
Okay, I'll go first. For me,
you just jumped right on
well,
that.
No, for me, it was recently. No, we did the Beatty Mansion in St. Joseph, Missouri. It was an old, like Dan was mentioning, it was a poor farm, wasn't it, at one time?
Well, it's a halfway house.
Most recently in the 1970s, 80s, it was a drug rehab facility. Anyway, we were up there in the investigation, on the second floor hallway, and we heard live with our own ears what sounded like a woman screaming in pain, immediately followed by a woman crying, and we caught it on audio. So you get these EVPs where you don't hear nothing and you record it. You go back, you play it back, then you can hear it. We heard this live with our own ears, and we got it on. So basically, I heard a disembodied voice, which, it's not the holy grail of what we do. That would be a full-body apparition. Mm-hmm. But if you hear somebody scream and there's nobody there, I mean, for what we do, that is intense.
Yeah, definitely.
I saw at Ashmore Estates, I saw a shadow figure cross, an exit sign down at the end of the hallway. It looked to be about 6 feet, human figure. So they, that's a gist of my favorite experiences right there.
Nice.
There you go. How about you, Dan?
I don't know. There have been a ton of like really, really cool experiences. I think probably my absolute favorite was one that I wasn't even investigating when it happened. I used to live up in Alaska, and I worked in IT. I was an engineer, and I was doing a third shift migration. So about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was leaving the IT office and heading for the elevators to go up to the patient floors. And there was a doctor's lounge that was kind of in an adjoining hallway. And so I'm walking down the hall, and I saw what I thought was a doctor, lab coat and, regular. It looked like a person, short, kind of reddish brown hair and a little goatee and round glasses. And he was heading for the elevators. And so I yelled out, hey, hold the elevators for me. I'm coming up too. And I kind of went around the corner, and I saw him standing there as the elevator doors were closing. And so they kind of slammed in front of me, and I said, well, jackass, all right, doctors can be snotty sometimes. And so I hit the call button to catch the other elevator, and the same elevator that he had just walked into and the doors had just closed on opened again, and there was no one there. So it was not, nothing transparent, nothing see-through. I literally thought it was another doctor, one of the doctors, and it was actually nothing. So that was probably the coolest thing. But yeah, lots of shadow figures, lots of just very strange things show up. It's great. It's a lot of fun.
Definitely.
That's awesome. So we're going to have to go to our half the show break here. And while we're gone, I think Scott should go get a refill on his soda.
I'm sorry.
You slurped it.
I heard so. Yeah.
He's drained. We'll go get some more.
Go get some more to drink. So everybody else, go fill your cup, and we'll be back in 2 minutes with Paranormal Research Institute. Stay tuned, everyone.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock, The Dark Sun Rising, on the Para-X Radio Network.
I am horror author James Hershey Jr. from the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Check out the book that started it all. What critics called the scariest book of the year. I am Legion. And if you're still breathing, check out the other two books in the series. The Surrogate of Souls and The Rise of the Revenant. These books will scare the hell out of you. That I promise. Demons, vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. When we are not live on the air like we are right now, you can find us at thejourneyradioshow.com. And please do find us on Facebook. Give us a like. And hey, we are the She Squatchers, so you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/SheSquatchersOfficial and give us a like right there. And check out our website, SheSquatchers.com. And click on the events page to see where we're going to be at next. And if we're close enough, come out and see us. So tonight we're here with Scott and Dan from Paranormal Research Institute. And I'm going to ask you guys again, what state are you out of?
Illinois.
Illinois. Just outside of Chicago?
We're 70 miles southwest of Chicago, yes. Far enough away from the big city. We're not a farming town, but we're about population 18,000.
That's a big town compared to where I grew up at. I grew up in a town of 803 people.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I like those towns.
Graduating class of 22 kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you were the top one, right?
I don't know about that. I was voted most likely to drive a different car to school every day.
Oh, okay.
I was. They made it up just for me because my stepdad would collect old muscle cars and then he'd restore them. But until then, you know, I'd have to go pick up the car and drive it home. So then I would drive it for like a week. And all the guys would come running out to see what kind of car I was driving now. And they always loved it. And I was like, yeah, it's an old car and it's loud. They always thought it was great. And I was like, well, whatever. I had no idea about cars. So, but I was always driving some old muscle car, I guess, with glass packs. Anyway.
Well, that's not hard to take.
Yeah, the guys seemed to really be into it. I had no idea.
As long as it's fast and loud, it's all good.
What's better than a woman in a Dodge Charger, right?
Right. A 72 Dodge Charger?
Right.
Yeah. I always say 72 was a good year.
Yeah.
That's when I was born. Ha ha. Anyway. So, back to the paranormal research you guys are doing. So, do you have any projects that you're working on right now that are really forefront in your mind, something, an ongoing project or something that you're looking forward to right now?
Right at the moment, I would love to finalize a deal. I want to actually go in and research the Joliet prison because it's never actually been explored as far as I know. It's they're now giving tours of it. The city of Joliet is buying it from the state of Illinois, and so it's kind of opened up a little bit as far as what happens. The state of Illinois is not exactly usually forthcoming as far as, you know, paranormal investigations and things, but small towns are much better. And so I'm trying really hard. I would love to be able to get in there and do that one. We've got, well, Ray's Place,
mm-hmm.
Probably the oldest brick structure in Illinois. Dates back to 1799 or so. Mm-hmm. This gentleman contacted us one time and said, hey, my house is really haunted, and we went out there and got checking into it, and this place was probably a fur trading place, something like that. It's built out of literally hand-fired brick from probably 1799, 1800, something like that.
Wow.
So it's a fascinating place. It's absolutely awesome. So that's one of our favorite sites to go out to, and we're trying to get some more information on that and things like that. But yeah, basically, I mean, we're, like I said, working with Mike and just trying to get everything finalized, everything right. Eventually, what we'd like to do once we really get the cartography down where we want it and everything is the Paranormal Research Institute will offer classes if other teams want to do this, because we really need an established, standardized method of investigation in the paranormal community. Because right now, if other groups go, hey, we were at this place and we caught this cool thing and check this out, does this mean, you know, what do you think? It's like, well, it's cool, but ultimately it doesn't do us a whole lot of good because we don't have the details around it and things like that. So if we can get other teams to start using this methodology, then we can start adding their information into our information and multiplying and quick, you know, more quickly to establish patterning.
So have you already seen an established pattern in something?
Nothing I'd really like to speak to. Everything's still kind of circumstantial, but yeah, we're starting to see a little hint of activity patterns.
And what do you think that could lead you to?
Well, ultimately, like I said, it would be able to give us sort of a paranormal forecast. If we can predict when activity is going to occur, or, you know, even within a few minute window of when activity is going to occur, then we can set up experiments based around that activity and assume it's going to happen then. So right now, when you do paranormal research, you're basically, it's kind of like fishing in a lake that you have no idea whether there's any fish in it. You have no idea what kind of fish in it. You have no idea what kind of bait they're going to bite on. And you just kind of row out into the middle and cast around and hope to God you catch something. And so we're trying to just narrow some of those variables a little bit so we can kind of guess when there's going to be activity, then we can set up experiments based on that activity, that type of thing.
Can I ask a quick question? I'm curious if you've been doing this in the same area. Like if you do it one night, are you doing it for many nights after that to kind of get the feeling of one particular area?
We kind of try to do the same locations over and over and monitor basically, like I said, weather conditions. I mean, we monitor everything up to barometric pressure, phases of the moon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we try and do it in some, you know, we try and keep, basically it's a control location. If we can get into the same place and do a repeat of the investigation, it's better for us.
So how many repeats do you do? I mean, are you looking at like two nights, five nights?
However many we can, the more the better. I mean, Duffy's, we've probably done what?
We've done this
15 times?
At least a dozen, 15, yeah.
And now with those 15 times, did you guys see anything like Jen was asking? Are you seeing any repeating? Yeah.
Yeah, we do actually somewhat. Like I said, it's a little too early to tell 100%, but yeah, there's definitely times when things are more active than others. There's times of the month when things seem to be more active than others. So it seems to coordinate a little bit with moon phases.
Okay.
Oh, the moon. People get crazy when the moon's full, right?
I work in a bar. People get absolutely insane when the moon's full.
Right?
I will 100% testify to that.
So are the ghosts more active when the moon's full?
You know, I think the ghosts really key off of the people. That's kind of the thing that I'm getting. So when the people are crazy, the activity in here is crazy. If the people are angry, then we have a lot more malicious-y kind of things. It really is keyed off of moods.
I hear ya. So, you know, here's a question I'm going to throw at you, so please don't feel like you've been thrown under the bus. Are you familiar with the term jump, like when a ghost jumps somebody?
Jumps into their body?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds god-awful. It's never happened to me.
Okay.
But I've never heard of the term, Dan.
I've kind of heard of it. I've never really experienced it.
Okay, well, I'm a psychic medium, and so I did work in the paranormal field for some years before I started doing Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And I have come to understand that when people are not in full control of their body, such as being intoxicated, they're more open to being jumped.
I can see that.
So, in that instance, have you ever had anybody talk about that at all? Like, feeling like they weren't in control?
In the bar, not really. I've never had anybody actually mention it. I've had a ton of people that say that they've been touched and brushed against and things like that. But for the most part, I think the entities here are more mischievous as opposed to malicious. I don't think they're out to control anybody or do anything bad or anything like that. They just kind of hang out and chill and like to make, you know, perform pranks.
For the next 20 minutes, I couldn't remember what my name was.
Oh, no.
These are our experiences.
That was a good impersonation right there.
Credibility.
I just Zach Bagans, everyone. Zach Bagans.
Aaron, quick, come with the camera.
So what do you think of Ghost Adventures?
What do I think? No comment.
What'd you say, Dan?
Wonderful entertainment. I think it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
My only problem with any of those shows is the fact that they like to portray themselves as experts when actually they're doing nothing more than running around places and going, ooh, look at that.
Yeah. No, it's this. What's that? What's that?
But yeah, I actually addressed that in Kansas City. Just the fact that there's a huge separation between para entertainment and paranormal research.
Definitely. Well, yeah, because like on some of these shows, like every 5 minutes they're encountering a demon or something's jumping off the wall or they're silly little devices. granted they have a TV show and they're doing pretty well for themselves. But at the end of the day, the reality of ghost hunting is you're not going to go into a house and be possessed within 20 seconds of being there. And I think what it is the general audience these days needs to be entertained. So if they have a show that where there's not a lot going on, they're not going to have any viewers anymore.
That's true. But, I like to use the Dead Files, the TV show called The Dead Files as an example.
Oh, with Amy and that other dude? Yeah.
Yep, Amy Allen. I love her.
Yep.
But because it's a TV show, they cut out all the boring stuff and they just put on the good stuff, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So it gives the viewers a really skewed perspective of how that kind of thing goes. Like, as a psychic medium, when I walk into the door of a place and people look at you and go, well, what do you feel? They expect right. you to know the entire story 2 seconds after you walk through the door because Amy Allen does it.
Right.
Well, no, she doesn't. She's walked through that house for I don't know how long before she started talking.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen like that. You don't walk in and immediately know everything. I mean, that just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And so I've been saying for years now, I wish they would put on the internet the uncut version of Amy's walk
right.
through a home. Because the uncut version of it, where she's walking through there for however many hours, and you can see that nothing's going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like the show we're talking about. They got a device called the SB7. Picks up radio frequencies, AM and FM. And they'll say, did you hear that? It just told me to leave. Really? All I heard was... I mean, it's static frequency. You might even catch like an Elton John song in there somewhere, It's picking up radio signal.
Well, I actually have an SP7 spirit box, and I have caught names. I've caught like sentences on there, which were pretty
have
cool.
Have you?
I have. Sometimes they were so clear it was scary.
Oh, really? And... See, I have never gotten anything off that device, but... Others have.
I really think it's intention. I think some people are more able to, channel the SB7, and others aren't. I don't think it's a straight technology type thing.
I've kind of gotten away from paranormal investigating for a while, but there's that new spirit box that they have that sounds so clear. It doesn't have this background noise in there. And it uses some kind of a pedal from a guitar or something.
Is that the one that KD built?
What?
Is that the one that KD built?
I don't know who built it. But Jenna, it was the one that they had down at Mystic Cats in Texas.
Oh, yes. There. Oh, yes. It's really cool, guys.
I don't know what they're called, but they don't have... Nick Roth had one on Paranormal Lockdown. I liked that, too.
Well, I would enjoy them a lot more if they could get rid of that static, because that static kind of gives me a headache, to be honest with you. So I can only listen to that thing for about 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm like, all right, enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
If they could eliminate all that static, I'd probably be more willing to use
Actually,
it.
Actually, the guys from Ghost Crier have gotten some fascinating stuff on their boxes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't Have you ever heard of them?
No.
They're actually out of Iowa. They've done some really, really cool stuff with spirit box stuff. And they want to work with us. We're trying to get together and actually work because they're very entertaining. They have a show on Vulu or Voodoo or whatever the heck it is. But they're also very scientific. And so we'd like to work with them. They'd like to work with us and just kind of swap techniques and things like that. And we love working with other groups just because everybody's got cool ideas.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool.
What was their name again?
It's Ghost Crier.
Okay. I'm going to check
Crier.
It out.
Crier. Like Crier.
As in like,
Crier?
Boo-hoo. Okay. Boo-hoo.
All right, so I'm seeing somebody in the chat room. Thank you, Travis, has written, it's Huff Paranormal's Wonder Box. Huff Paranormal's Wonder Box. Check it out. Check it out, you guys. If you haven't played with one of those, you need to because they're pretty cool.
Steve Huff stuff?
It just says Huff Paranormal's Wonder Box in the chat room.
Okay. So. Yeah, we'll check it out.
All right. Thank you so much for that in the chat room. So, Dan, can you tell us your Bigfoot story?
Bigfoot story.
Take it away, Dan.
Absolutely, I can. So, I used to live up in Alaska. I lived up there for about 8.5 years. And the last couple years that I was up there, I actually lived up in Hatcher's Pass. I was caretaking a place about 2,000 feet up into the pass. And the Athabascan natives, it's Athabascan territory, they will not go to Hatcher's Pass to this day. They said it belongs to Hairy Man. They don't belong there. And so, of course, I lived there. And I lived about 5 miles past where the power lines ended. So I didn't have electricity, didn't have running water. And I was out in my truck one day watching Die Hard, as a matter of fact, on a little portable DVD player because I could plug it in my truck and it would run. And so about middle of February, the snow had kind of started to melt and I'm sitting there watching my movie, and all of a sudden it was, you know, the whole hair standing up, and you feel like somebody's watching you thing. And so I looked up from the movie, and the parking lot where I was at was, it's about 80 yards, the length of the parking lot over the tree line. And so it's a ways. And I'm kind of looking around to see if there's anybody looking at me, because like I said, I'm in the middle of the mountains, there's nobody around. And all of a sudden, this snowball, roughly the size of a football, comes flying out of the tree line. And I watch it arc out of the tree line and head all the way over and actually impact the windshield right in front of me. So the accuracy was just ridiculously good. And, I got out of the truck and I looked around, and obviously I didn't see anything, but it was very, very bizarre.
So you think that was a Bigfoot throwing snowballs at you?
Well, I know it wasn't a human. There's no way a human could have thrown it that far or something that big or that accurate.
And a regular bear, a bear can't throw snowballs either, right?
No, yeah, they can't.
But we also found some footprints up in the mountain that were pretty suspicious and things like that. So actually a very good friend of mine that has a secondhand store up there had made a cast of a huge footprint, and you know, she told me where she got it, and I used to fish there and stuff. And yeah, I mean, the Alaska stuff is very, very big. It's just kind of an accepted thing amongst Alaska culture. There's two different tribes. There's the Hairy Man, which is the more gentle, big, you know, typical Bigfoot type thing. And then there's another one that I forget what the heck they call it, but is, you know, a little shorter, about 7 feet tall, and just meaner than snot. So
do they look the same?
Like I said, it's just accepted as, you know, in native culture, is this happens.
Do they look the same? Like just one's bigger than the other?
They're a little different shades, I think. I think the fur is a little different shade. And like I said, the short ones are just mean and snotty.
I wonder why that is. Did they ever say why?
No, they really don't. Although we had actually planned, we're trying to get a trip together. There's a place up there that back in 1948 was abandoned it was a cannery town out in literally the middle of nowhere. It was abandoned because town residents kept getting ripped apart. I mean, they would find like pieces of arms and legs and heads and torsos, and it was all blamed on Hairy Man out there. So we were trying to get a an expedition together. I'd like to go out there for a couple weeks and just see what we can see out there.
And see if you can get ripped apart, or are you
I think that wouldn't happen, but I guess if it did, it would be some sort of credence. It would be some sort of evidence.
Oh, man.
And who would you volunteer for that?
Count me out.
Yeah, Scott doesn't camp. I have a group of about 10 guys that want to go, some cinematographers and, you know, some adventuring types and, well, just some idiots. Yeah, so hopefully I'm actually trying to get permission. It's native-owned land, so I'm trying to get permission from the natives to go out there and actually film and spend a couple weeks and see what we can see.
So would you guys be bringing the cartographer then?
That one will probably not have a whole lot of cartography. That's just going to have a bunch of idiots running around in the mountain trying to get ripped apart.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, yeah,
Are you going to assign uniforms? Are you going to have red shirts handing out?
We might. Depends on how well I like the guys that want to go.
To get permission from the natives, though, you can't just call them on the phone. They actually want to meet you in person.
Yeah, so basically I have to fly up to Alaska, go sit in their office until they deign to meet with me, and then go, okay, I want to do this and this. And essentially it's not a bribe, but it's a gratuity. There's a charge to use the native land, and so it's a negotiation of how much the charge is and what are we going to do with it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, it's a whole process, which is kind of why it didn't happen this year.
Sure.
You want to go?
Have other people been able to do this up there?
There's been people that have tried to stay in the area, and everything that I've seen, they'll stay like a night, and then they're like, hell with that, and they run away. So, yeah, there's supposed to be some really crazy activity. But, I mean, it's like we're talking about 110 miles away from anything. It is literally out in the middle of nowhere. You have to take a boat for about 3 hours. You want to go?
Oh, my gosh. That would be amazing. I would say, heck, yeah.
Right on.
Oh, my
Jenna God. Is our fearless girl. She's the fearless one. Here's me going,
It sounds like so much fun.
You know, my thought real quick, I wanted to get in. My thoughts on the whole, you know, ghosts and Bigfoot and even the UFO stuff, I'm tending to lean that it's more portal-based than anything.
Yeah, that's kind of the theory we've all been working on is portals.
I mean, I do believe in Bigfoot, but I think rather than him just living out there for every day, I think he's basically jumping in and out at will. That's just my opinion. Rather than just living out there for hundreds of years, I think he's coming and going as he chooses.
From where?
Someplace else.
That would be
an alternate good question.
Neverland, maybe? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're into physics at all, do you believe in like string theory and multiple random universes, that type of thing?
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be that far a stretch. If you look, the caribou has adapted to see an ultraviolet light, because in regular infrared light, polar bears were invisible to it, and so they get slaughtered. So basically over the millennia, they've adapted to see an ultraviolet light. So is it that much of a stretch to think that an advanced creature would have at some point developed the ability to see these portals opening and closing and basically use them as transportation?
Also, you think that they just randomly open and close, that they're not doing it themselves?
I think that what happens is that certain conditions occur, and as the conditions occur, the portals start popping almost like, you know, boiling water or popcorn. And that's why some places are haunted and some places aren't, is those conditions apply, and so you have portals that just start going pop, 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 and I think the Bigfoots, you know, maybe have evolved to be able to see this thing happen.
Well, that's interesting. I like this idea. I can't wait to hear more as you investigate more about that and find out more. That would be very interesting. Very cool. Very cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. So, do you have any events coming up? I know you guys just had something, didn't you?
We were just down at Ash Bash, down at Ashmore Estates, which is a very cool location. Robin Terry owns it. It was to benefit the Lost Limbs Foundation, which, are you guys familiar with that at all?
Oh, yeah. They had a booth right next door. I was at CryptidCon in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right on. Okay. Yeah, Mike Couch is the guy that runs it. So, yeah, we saw all those guys. I mean, we saw a bunch of old friends last weekend and stuff.
Chris St. Booth was there. He's a riot, that guy.
So, yeah, we saw a whole bunch of people and got to hang out and have fun. Mm-hmm. Don't really have a whole lot of stuff coming up as far as events go. Honestly, most of the time, if we get a weekend away, we'd much rather spend it going out and doing research. I mean, I love events, but when we go to events, because some people here work regular week jobs, mm-hmm. so we only have weekends, and so I'd rather be out gathering data than hitting events. So it's kind of rare for us to hit events. I'd like to do more, and maybe we will in the future, but right now it's kind of the grind of get out there and get the data if we can.
That, you know, we've been doing so many events this year, and I can tell you what, it's really cut into our squatching time. And then when we do set aside squatching time, we've been rained on a lot.
Yeah, I
know. Ton of rain up there. It's actually been dry here.
I know when you were going to squatch in Kentucky, that got kind of poo-pooed, right?
It did. Yes. We were having the remnants of a tropical storm, and then a hurricane was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I mean, somebody had gone outside and they said literally it felt like somebody was throwing buckets of water from the roof. Because it didn't even feel like rain. It didn't even feel like rain.
Yeah.
So it was crazy. Nuts. I've never seen, well, maybe you've seen rain like that once here, but it was nuts. It was nuts. We have 1 minute left of the show. Can you tell people where they can find you online?
You can hit us up on Facebook at Paranormal Research Institute, and we're also on www.paranormalresearchinstitute.org or .com. That site is a little vague right at the moment because I haven't had a whole lot of time to develop it, so most of the stuff is actually on Facebook. You're better off to hit that, but hopefully we'll be doing the website more coming up here pretty quickly.
Awesome. And do you have any future events coming up?
We're doing just some fun October stuff. We're doing
a ghost walk, so to speak.
Yeah, we're helping out with a ghost walk in Ottawa just because it's a good time. It's one of the things is you have to have fun doing this or what's the point, you know? So this is kind of, October's kind of the chill out and have a good time month.
Perfect. I just want to thank you guys for coming on the show. That's Scott Hibbs and Dan Williams from ParanormalResearchInstitute.org. Check them out, everybody, and go like their Facebook page and follow them on Facebook for all their latest. And hey, we're the She Squatchers. Check us out at SheSquatchers.com and TheJourneyRadioShow.com. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Central, 10 o'clock Eastern. And we'll be here next Wednesday with Dr. John Stamey. We're going to be talking about Tennessee Bigfoot. So make sure to tune in then. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and have a great week. Good night.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Good night.